What's behind the recent tension between Serbia and Kosovo? The two sides have met in Brussels to resolve a dispute sparked by vehicle license plates. But are they likely to find an agreement, and can conflict be avoided? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. The leaders of Serbia and Kosovo have held rare talks in Brussels that European Union mediators hope will de-escalate growing tensions. The two sides have been at odds ever since Kosovo declared independence from Serbia in 2008. NATO says it's increasing its troop numbers along the border with renewed fears of a possible conflict in the region. The alliance's chief, Jens Stoltenberg, has met separately with both leaders and called for calm while saying NATO troops were ready to intervene if necessary. The latest dispute was sparked last month when Kosovo said Serbian identity documents and car plate numbers would no longer be valid in its territory. The Serb minority in Kosovo reacted angrily to the restrictions on movement, prompting Kosovo's government to delay the measures until next month. We'll bring in our guests in a moment. First, Al Jazeera's Ognjen Zoric has more from Brussels.
The first meeting of the highest officials of Serbia and Kosovo after more than a year is taking place at a time of high tensions and rhetorics that is so strained that the European Commission describes it as inflammable. European diplomats emphasize that they are determined that the meeting will continue until a solution to the current crisis is found. Latest tensions were triggered late in July ahead of Kosovo's intention to implement a law making all citizens, including Serbs, to use Kosovar car plates. Also, people from Serbia entering Kosovo would have to have Pristina-issued exit-entry documents, which would be used as an ID during day stay. This move triggered local Serbs who put up roadblocks and sounded air raid sirens. Police stated that even several gunshots have been reported. Kosovo postponed the implementation of the law for 1 month and Serbs have removed their roadblocks, but the tensions have stayed. Ahead of September 1st, which is a new date of planned implementation, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg held meetings with both President of Serbia and Kosovo Prime Minister, which was not an usual practice ahead of EU-facilitated dialogue. His message was loud and clear. NATO peacekeeping mission in Kosovo, KFOR, has 4,000 troops and it's ready to intervene if stability between Serbia and Kosovo is at risk.
I call on all sides to show restraint and to avoid violence. NATO continues to monitor closely the situation on the ground. Our KFOR peacekeeping mission remains focused on its UN mandate. Should stability be jeopardized, KFOR stands ready to intervene.
We do not agree on almost anything, but what's important is that Serbia will stick to international law and agreements and everything that was signed.
Kosovo's institutions and citizens in the current situation have reason to be vigilant about the destructive approach of our northern neighbor towards Kosovo and the region in general under Russia's detrimental agenda for Europe and the Balkans.
Both Vučić and Kurti said that they are willing to work on de-escalation in order to find a mutually agreeable solution for the normalization of relations of Serbia and its former province that declared its independence in 2008. In Brussels, for Inside Story, Ognjen Zoric.
All right, let's get a closer look at this story. Kosovo declared its independence from Serbia in 2008 after years of strained relations between the majority ethnic Albanian population and minority Serbs. But it has not been recognized by the UN or Serbia, while the U.S. and some EU countries have welcomed the move. And Serbia has blocked Kosovo from joining various international institutions. But both are now seeking to join the European Union, so normalizing relations is seen as crucial for their bids. All right, let's bring in our guests. In Pristina, Una Haidari, a reporter for Politico Europe. In Sarajevo, Aleksandar Brezar, a Western Balkans analyst, host and producer of the podcast Calling. And in Belgrade, human rights lawyer Milan Antonijević. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Una, let me start with you today. From your perspective, can this meeting yield any concrete results?
What we've seen so far is that Kosovo Prime Minister Albin Kurti has said that he's not withdrawing his pledge to apply reciprocity measures starting on September 1st, which means that the Kosovar side isn't going to back down from insisting that Serbian citizens who enter Kosovo not be able to travel with license plates that are issued in Serbia, and that they need special entry documents. We're at this moment waiting for the EU to hold a conference, the head of the foreign policy chief of the European Union to hold a press conference and give some indication of what the agreement is in Brussels. But what I'm predicting at this point is that they're going to try to find an intermediate solution that'll try to comb over some of the differences that exist between the two sides, and in order to delay the intensity or the tensions that we're seeing right now.
Milan, Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić said that he expected difficult talks with Kosovo's prime minister. He said, we do not agree almost on anything. So from your vantage point, how difficult do you think these talks are going to be?
I believe that there is an urge to come to agreement, especially on a freedom of movement. We saw what the measures introduced by Kosovo at the end of July, on the August the 1st, produced, and that they produced also insecurity on the north of Kosovo. Knowing that and knowing all the facts related to security, I believe that the Serbian side is ready and willing to negotiate. They showed it also in the past. There were some agreements not on the highest level reached, such as the agreement on energy sector recently. So I believe that there is potential that Serbia should insist on already signed agreements, that Serbia should also insist on the future of the dialogue as such, and to see how to overcome the difficulties that exist at the moment. We saw Albin Kurti, I think, a few months ago. We had a very tough discussion as civil society and parts of the society dealing with Serbian and Kosovo relations. I expect that in the name of the security of the population on the whole of Kosovo, the agreement, especially on the freedom of movement, must be on the horizon, and that this is a good start, no matter how the first positions are far from each other.
Aleksandar, from your perspective, what does Brussels hope to achieve, both in the short term and in the long term?
Yeah, I think this is a really important key question today, especially, as both sides have said, the conversation or the dialogue has stalled over the past year or so, if not longer. We've seen several flare-ups in the meantime, and Brussels has always attempted, Brussels has attempted, as always, to be the sort of mediating, pacifying, side to this. If we're going to be perfectly honest about this, I don't expect much more than just the usual kicking the can down the road. Brussels does not necessarily, the officials in Brussels do not necessarily have, much of a carrot or much of a stick to the carrot that they have offered to both sides in this. And I do not expect some sort of a grand solution to the outstanding problems when it comes to this issue. Anything that's going to go beyond what we've usually heard, which is that both sides have a very rigid stance on the problems that they're trying to resolve.
Una, of course, there are many who are worried right now that Kosovo and Serbia might be headed toward another war. You wrote a piece for Politico earlier this month where you said that on the ground in Kosovo, people have been downplaying that possibility and that panic had subsided, at least for now. So what is the mood at the moment?
Well, people in Pristina are actually, as I said in that article and many others have echoed, people in Pristina are surprised that there's suddenly such a big global interest in the conflict between Kosovo and Serbia, or the be careful with the terms that we use. When I say conflict, I mean the intractable tensions that exist between the two countries, but that are not armed by any means at this point. They're surprised that there's such an interest in what's happening, because various forms of or similar forms of violence and tensions have existed and been recurring over the past couple of years. I think everyone understands that everyone in Europe is on a much higher level of alertness and sort of anxiety over this because of the ongoing invasion of Ukraine. But people don't understand why people are that interested. On the other hand, I feel like the stakes are very high right now because primarily Serbia is the country that's being pushed in a corner. It's being expected to make a final sort of move with regard to sanctions towards Russia. It's one of the few countries in Europe that is not participating in the sanctions packages against the Russian Federation. And everyone in Kosovo believes that because Serbia is being pressured by Brussels to participate in these sanctions, that it could be more prone to radical moves, especially when it comes to Kosovo.
Milan, I know you touched on this a bit in your previous answer, but you know, where do things go from here? What happens next? What are the next steps?
Well, I fully disagree with this statement that there is a can in this and that it's hit down the street. I heard it before, also during the day, during the negotiations. So I wouldn't simplify it as such. There is a large question of insecurity, especially on the north, that people feel, and this is a genuine feeling from a Serbian community on the north. There is also the announcement that President Vucic will talk with the Serbian community today, calming it down, and as he did also at the beginning of August when he had the first crisis, if we may call it like that. So I wouldn't make any bigger parallel with the Russian aggression to Ukraine. There is no possibility that anything like it happen in our region as long as both parties are dedicated to the dialogue.
Alexander, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has said that the situation on the ground has improved. Where do things stand right now?
There's something that has to be said about this, and it's related to what Mr. Antonievich said before me. When it comes to kicking the can down the road in Brussels, it is important to note that all these meetings have recently been all about kicking the can down the road, because Brussels has not offered anything to any of the sides. And I'm not just talking about Kosovo and Serbia. I'm talking about all of the Western Balkan states who are trying to be, EU members at some point down the road. So, in terms of Serbia, that's the further formalizing the accession process or moving it along. For Kosovo, it's just getting visa liberalization, which has been stuck for years, et cetera, et cetera. So these meetings between Pristina and Belgrade are a convenient way for both sides. And on both ends now you have strongmen, especially in Mr. Vucic, president of Serbia, but also in Mr. Kurti at the same time on the Kosovo side, where both sides are flexing muscles and trying to push the other side into some kind of a corner where they will have to make a mistake. And it's all about this kind of diplomatic slash political slash what do you want to call it, arm wrestle that's taking place in front of our eyes. But when it comes to things on the ground, and this is important, and this is something that Mr. Antonievich might not know, because I don't know what's the last time he was in the north of Kosovo. I've been there, I've talked to people, it's my job to do that. People's concerns might be legitimate, but people's concerns are not being, and we were talking about ethnic Serbs in the north of Kosovo, they might be legitimate in terms of them feeling a particular way, them feeling maybe afraid or scared or pushed into a corner again in a very direct sense. But Belgrade is not helping much either, and Belgrade is not helping much either by continuing this cat and mouse game with Pristina without actually getting to any kind of a solid result or any kind of practical resolution to any of the problems, regardless of the provocations from both sides, and that has to be taken into account in terms of just the general security situation. I think that It's worth noting that just 60 kilometers down the road in the capital, Pristina, you have concerts that are taking place. People are, going on with their lives as if, there's no crisis. Similar thing in Belgrade, in the capital of Serbia. Mm. And people who have been caught in the crosshairs here, mm-hmm. these very ethnic Serbs that Mr. Antonievich is talking about, are the ones who are legitimately concerned, but I do not see that, you know, their leaders, their representatives are actually doing anything to make their lives better. And this is not just about finding a solution with Pristina. This has a lot to do with very practical things on the ground, where Belgrade, the claims to be, you know, responsible for these people, basically does nothing and has done nothing for years, except use them as political pawns in this, like I said, cat and mouse game between the two sides.
Una, in the event that fighting were to actually erupt, if tensions escalate again, you know, Kosovo and Serbia are bound by an agreement in which NATO has the final say. I want to ask you just how entwined NATO and the EU are in the local peacekeeping efforts.
NATO is absolutely the final arbiter in any conflict or escalation that could erupt between Kosovo and Serbia. When the NATO bombing of the rump state of Yugoslavia happened, or Serbia-Montenegro and obviously Kosovo too happened in 1999, an agreement was signed that was unprecedented, that continues to be unprecedented in NATO history, which basically means that any time Serbia would want to encroach the territory of Kosovo militarily or otherwise, it would immediately provoke a reaction from NATO. So something that the public might be more familiar with in terms of the Article 5 protections in NATO exists when it comes to Kosovo, even though Kosovo isn't a NATO member. This is why people on the ground have, to some extent, downplayed the possibility of an all-out war happening. That doesn't mean that there can't be incidents and, you know, sadly, tensions or even loss of life, but a full-out conflict in you know, similar to anything that's happening in Ukraine is almost entirely impossible, precisely because NATO's forces on the ground in Kosovo has spent the last 20 years almost exclusively protecting the northern border and making sure that both the Kosovo Albanian and the Kosovo Serb community are protected in those territories. Like I said, again, that doesn't mean that there couldn't be incidents and stuff like that, but an actual full-on conflict is almost entirely unlikely.
Milan, in the aftermath of the latest flare-up, Kosovo's interior minister accused Serbia and Russia of triggering and supporting rioting. What has the response to that been from Serbia?
Well, linking Serbia to Russia fully is more of a fake dilemma. There is a Serbian policy that's fully independent from any Russian influence, and the security of the population of the Serbs on north is there on stake, and Belgrade does not play with that as far as I can see. I've been to Kosovo just a month ago, visited also Dečane, where NATO KFOR forces are protecting the monastery. They're also working on in all of the enclaves, and they're also very agile in avoiding any of the provocation from either side. But the thing that I know, speaking with the Serbian community on the north, is that the special forces of Kosovo, while entering the north, there are always incidents, small incidents. However, if the tensions are rising, I believe that these incidents can be seen as a provocation, and I hope that especially Kosovo sides and Pristina will not try to make any reasons for the Serbian community that's frightened at the moment to react. So the responsibility is shared. I believe that both sides that are now meeting in Brussels in front of the community there and the envoy and also Borrell, they are aware of these facts, and everything that both Serbia and Kosovo will get, they will get it on the negotiating table. I believe that this notion is placed in Belgrade. I hope, and this is the message that we transferred also to Albin Kurti when we spoke with him in June, that the negotiating table should be the only table for solving any of the issues. Luckily, there is no Zelensky in the region. There is no Putin in the region either. So there is no possibility for any larger conflict to evolve. And also, recent Stoltenberg's messages related to the security and the employment of NATO forces is also giving a strong signal that none of the possibilities for greater conflict is not in on the Western Balkans, and that everybody is aware, just following the situation and trying to solve every issue that exists, especially issues related to freedom of movement and any other freedom that should be guaranteed to everyone on Kosovo. And also, I may put also a positive note to Serbia supporting the visa liberalization of for Kosovo citizens related to the EU, and these are the gestures that should be seen as positive, because they will and they have to the possibility to open many of the processes that were still in Brussels.
Alexander, the EU has said that both Serbia and Kosovo need to normalize their relations if they wish to ultimately join the bloc. If the EU were to eventually accept Serbia and Kosovo as member states, is that something that would diffuse these tensions at all?
That is a really good question. Here's the thing. For Serbia to enter the EU, it has to recognize the independence of Kosovo. The 35th chapter of the current EU negotiations deals with exactly that. It is absolutely clear, and has become absolutely clear over the years, that the only way for Serbia to enter the EU and become a full-fledged member state is to recognize Kosovo. Now, what that recognition actually will look like in practice, it's a different thing. Obviously, there might be a little bit of room to maneuver there, but I do not see Serbia entering the EU without actually resolving this in a way that's positive for everyone, not just one side. As far as Kosovo is concerned, I think there are several things at play when it comes to its EU membership bid. As you know, it's bundled together with Bosnia and Herzegovina as a potential, quote unquote, potential candidate country. It's what I like to call a cardboard medal that was just given out to the two countries, because for, you know, based at least on the opinion of people in Brussels or the officials in Brussels, the two do not fulfill certain requirements to be full-fledged candidate countries like Montenegro, Serbia, North Macedonia, and Albania. On the other hand, if you look at all the actual practicalities of what life is like in Kosovo, what the politics are like, what the political life is like in Kosovo. We are talking about the youngest democracy in the world, Western-style democracy in the world. We're talking about the youngest country, the country that has most recently declared independence and has been partially recognized in Europe, the second youngest in the world. It's a very vibrant society. It's a very vibrant environment. It's much more, you could even say that it's much more democratic than some other candidate countries from the region. And despite this, I mean, the state or the position that it has found itself in is, in my opinion, very sad when it comes to about 2 million people who live there, regardless of their ethnic background.
Alexander, sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're starting to run out of time. We only have about a minute and a half left. I also want to ask you, if NATO were to intervene or step up its presence even further, is that something that would really be a de-escalatory measure? You know, would it ultimately help, or could that actually inflame things as well?
There are certain rules and regulations that, determine how much involvement NATO can have, both in Kosovo and, as you know, also in Bosnia-Herzegovina, where it has a presence through its EU4 mission. Obviously, things would have to escalate between Kosovo and Serbia first for NATO to, you know, intervene. Can it be more physically present on the ground? Can there be more, you know, actual boots on the ground that the people? that's a really interesting question, and whether that would lead to anything. I don't think there's a need for that at the moment. I personally don't see it. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that would play into this whole thing as a sort of a factor that would make things worse. Mm-hmm. I think NATO's presence in Kosovo is a positive thing, and I think it makes everyone feel much safer, both the ethnic Albanian community, the ethnic Serb community, and all other communities that live in Kosovo.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there today. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Una Haidari, Alexander Brezar, and Milan Antonievich. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.